I'm glad you're here this morning, and I appreciate that Chaplain Rodney Stillwell is with us again. Rodney is in the right place. I have seen him in action over at the prison and working with the other prisoners and inmates, as you call them. And it is my pleasure, and it's our opportunity to hear Rodney speak again this morning in the absence of Don Harvey. And I didn't know that Don was not going to be here when he was asked originally to come. So as some of us like to say, this is a God wink when we decided today would be our WMU Focus Sunday. And in asking Rodney to come and speak to us this morning about what's on his heart, and he's going to keep on knocking. Welcome, friend.
I'm not quite sure what to make of this, being asked as a man, the only man, I was reminded, on the program today. I see that they have excused Jeremy and Justin and Barry and Don, and told them all that your services are no longer needed. In fact, Don's not even here, and probably not even in the state from what I understand. And so I was asked, and so the weight of the entire male gender this morning is on my shoulders. If I screw it up, there'll be another man to speak in the church again. It is WMU, Women's Missionary Union Sunday. And again, I'm not sure why they asked me to speak. Maybe they thought I looked good in a skirt or something. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. But I am glad and blessed to be here with you again. And as one who I suppose was asked to come today to share a word about some of the fruits of the labor of this church and of the WMU, and how all the WMU of the Pilot Mountain Baptist Association joins together every year to have a party, a Christmas service and party at the prison. As one inmate told me after this service this past Christmas, he said, "Did they bring the pickles this year?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Man, nobody brings pickles to the prison but those women." And I'm glad they did. As I prepared for this, I didn't think I would be as moved knowing as I did sitting there in the pew just a minute ago. And it dawned on me this was the first time I would be preaching in this pulpit after we lost your pastor. And he was with us when we had our party at the prison this year. In fact, I found out of his death by one of the ex-inmates who was here that morning as we loaded up the truck with supplies to take them to the prison to be used for the party. And Scott helped us to do that, and that ex-offender helped me as well to load up the truck, and he texted me that morning when the news began to be shared and told me about that, and he was very moved just by the few moments that he had with our friend and our pastor, Scott. We come this morning and we stand in his example, and we stand here this morning hurting. And as I felt some of that pain from different ones of you as you came and shared with me and said hi, I remembered the words and the wisdom of a great American poet, Robert Frost, who said, "The way out is always the way through." The way out is always the way through. And the faith of the women in the WMU and the faith of this congregation will be the way through this time that of tears and of loss and of grief. Because it will be on the strength of the faith of the women, as it always is. Now, I can say about this about the Baptist Church because I've been a Baptist longer than I hadn't been in this life. And the day that the WMU shuts its doors and boards it up, that'll be the day the Baptist churches of our country are gone. Because those women are the strength that called me into the church and supported my faith. They are the strength of the church whenever it has a times of problems, of persecution. They are the strength of prayers that is persistent. They are the examples of perspiration that know how to work and do things. They are the people who know how to pray and know how to serve. They are the soul of the church in every church I've ever been involved with. And the WMU only gets recognition once a year. But it is 365 days that they are working and working hard to share. And so if we are to get through this time of persecution, and this it will be with the persistent prayers that we see in the book of Acts in this story. And Sue said, great day, it's 17 verses. I said, yeah, and I'm going to read it two or three times, and that'll be the whole sermon. The story is a beautiful story, and the story I give you is a story about an insistent man named Peter and a persistent woman named Rhoda. And on this day, I felt it was appropriate to remember this story about her that is often overlooked and often unappreciated, as our women are. It is the story of Rhoda, buried there near the end of the 12th chapter of this great story. You've heard it said that every great story, every great man that is in the Bible or in our lives is what? Got a great woman who is back there pushing him and telling him which direction and how to tie his shoes. And this story, Rhoda is there, and she tells us a great deal about what we need to learn and remember today in celebrating the faith and the work of the WMU. Now, the story has been made clear and told that we have here that Herod, as all good politicians do, was reading his polls. And the polls showed him that he was out of favor with the Jewish people. And this was a particularly difficult time because Jerusalem always got a little out of whack whenever the holidays came around. This was the holidays of the Passover time. And so what was done, Herod had a particular squad of soldiers that were his SWAT team that he called in for all Jewish holidays because the Jewish people need to be kept in line, and they got all their religion riled up and their politics mixed up and things kind of got out of hand. And he didn't know that he always needed to have an extra show of force at the holiday time to kind of keep them in line and to remind the Jewish people in Jerusalem who was indeed in charge, and it was the Romans. And so Herod had a little place where he would have his soldiers come. They were right there overlooking the Temple Mount. And so as the Jewish people gathered from all around to raise their hands and praise to God and come from different places across the Palestinian landscape, and from different countries they would travel around and make a pilgrimage there for the worship, they would look up and to see the beauty of the temple and also in the background the strength of the Roman army. Herod would flex his muscles there and remind them all that he indeed was the king's appointed person and was the one in charge. And so reading his polls and knowing that it pleased the Jews, he gathered up one of the members of the early church and sent James to his death, and then saw that when his numbers spiked in the polls in CNN, what did he do? He got Peter and got ready to do the same thing, but was stopped from killing Peter and persecuting Peter because it was the holiday and everything kind of came to an end. And so he put Peter in between squads of soldiers and chained him up and left him there, knowing that this is what he's going to do as soon as the holiday was over and Sunday had passed and it was time for Monday's business to begin again. And so there is Peter in the middle of the night, sleeping, chained, with soldiers all around him, behind doors in the prison. And that is where the Lord begins to work when we are at our bottom, at our worst. One of the inmates told me one time, the only person you'll ever see when you're at the bottom is God, because your family's going to have left you, your friends are going to have forsaken you, your job is going to have fired you, and the only thing that you have got when you're at the bottom is God. So look around when you're at the bottom. That which is moving, that which is looking, that which is active will be the Lord himself, because he's the only one there at the bottom that we have. And so when there they are, and Peter is there, chained between all the soldiers, and he is ready to die, that's when the Lord begins to work. Sometimes in a situation, brothers and sisters, God begins to work whenever we let go. And whenever we realize that we are in such a polemical and difficult situation that we cannot get out of it, your brains won't outthink it, your money won't outbuy it, your power, your manipulation, nothing you've got is going to work. And that is when God begins to work, when we are in a position of desperation and move to devotion. And then we can let go and let God, as our friends in AA say it at the prison. And so at that point, he let go and chained with no hope at all other than the miraculous power of God. God began to work. And the angel of the Lord came to him right there in prison. And Peter obeyed and he stood up and he got his shoes on and got his coat around him. And the chains fell off and he followed the angel through one door and by one set of soldiers and on to another. In fact, the last door leading out into the street opened of its own accord. And Peter was miraculously saved from his persecution and from his death. And there and then he goes, what? He goes to Mary's house. Because as the situation was dire and bad in prison, what it says right there, the scripture tells us right there, so Peter was kept in prison, but earnest prayer for him was made to God by the church. And the whole story hinges right there and goes from bad news to good news because of the earnest prayer made to God by the church. And Peter goes out and goes on and goes to the house of Mary where people had gathered to pray for him. And there he knocks at the door. And he knocks at the door. And finally, the church is in there praying and they send the maid to the door to answer it. And Rhoda is her name. And she cannot believe what she hears, that Peter, who they thought was in prison, or Peter, who they thought was certainly to be died, his fate was to be one of death at the hands of Herod. What happens is she cannot believe it and leaves him standing there at the door and goes back to tell everybody the good news that the prayers have been answered. The church, being the church, doesn't believe its prayers have been answered. And they can't believe it. And they finally tell Rhoda what? You're mad. You're crazy. It just can't be. And so Peter stands there at the door and continues to knock. The dogs are barking. The neighbors are complaining. And Peter's knocking gets louder and louder. And Rhoda continues to insist to them, no, it is true. He has been delivered. The Lord has answered our prayers. And finally, they all show up at the door, probably just wanting to shut crazy Rhoda up because of her insistence, and she wouldn't let go of the issue. And they find Peter and see him saved. They have a little prayer meeting there at the outside of the door, and they give God the praise, and Peter goes on, and the church goes on its way. What a crazy story. It is the story of a persistent Peter who knocks at the door and an insistent woman named Rhoda who won't let it go. In the face of persecution, we are in the days of persecution, church. Make no mistake about it. The numbers of persecution I want to share with you today are 132, 18, and 260. One is one out of every three African-American males in the United States today between the ages of 16 and 24 is in jail, prison, on probation, or parole. Conversely, one out of 32 is on or on some kind of campus of college or a university for higher education. We are losing in America an entire generation. 18. Because 18 of the 50 United States today spend more money on jails and prisons than they do on colleges and universities. And the last number of persecution is 260. Because of the $80 billion the United States spends on federal, state, jails and local prisons, it averages out that each child, each adult, each citizen of the United States in an annual year in a year pays a $260 worth of taxes that alone cost jails and prisons to operate and to be built. Every U.S. citizen pays $260 every year. We are living in a time of persecution by violence that can only be overcome by prayer. The story in Acts tells us about how Herod's persecution of the early church resulted in the death of many and in the incarceration of Peter. Last week, violence touched our own hearts at the prison. A man who had only been released less than a month, whose life had been turned around and changed by God, went over to the neighborhood he was raised in, although he wasn't staying there now, picked up his mother, had his Bible, and was on his way to a Baptist church in our community. He was the victim of a random shooting because one of the gang members had taken over the neighborhood here in Winston-Salem. One of the gang members from the Bloods of the Crips had passed an initiation test, and part of his initiation test was to find a random person and to kill him on the spot to get into the gang. And he killed this man whose life had been changed as he had his Bible in his hand and was picking up his mother to go to church. Less than 2 weeks ago that happened. We are living in a time of persecution. We are living in a time where the numbers do not lie, and we are living in a time where violence is running roughshod over and changing the landscape of our community in many ways. And what is the bad news? I've just shared it with you. But the good news is things and change right here in verse 5 of the 12th chapter of the story of Peter in the book of Acts. So Peter was kept in prison, but earnest prayer was made for him to God by the church. Prayer is the answer to persecution. Today's spotlight is on the WMU, which is an organization that serves this community and this church in many ways. Without the ladies of the WMU, the Baptist denomination would not be what it is. These ladies are women who work hard and who are always involved with projects, but they are women who are marked by the action and the commitment of prayer. It is at the heart of all of what they do. And prayer is the answer for persecution. Always has been, always will be. It is not only the prayer that speaks to God and tells him, like most of our prayers, "Oh Lord, do you know what Jeremy's doing? Oh Lord, do you know what Justin's doing? Oh Lord, do you know we need a preacher? Oh Lord, do you know we need more money in the budget?" This is not the kind of prayer that is at the heart that overcomes persecution and brings people together in times of trial and crisis and challenge. The kind of prayer that we're talking about, earnest prayer, is the kind of prayer that doesn't give up and expects an answer. It is the kind of prayer that continues to knock when nobody answers. It is the kind of prayer that listens to God as much as it talks to God. Now, this is a spotlight on the women today, and y'all know that one of the great things that women hate in the world is not to be listened to, especially by a man who's supposed to love them. I've taken Valentine's after Valentine's to my wife like I did this year, and she's told me many a time, "If you can keep your $3, just listen to me when I need to talk to you." Darn Hallmark cards are expensive nowadays. I know y'all found that out this week. Just keep your cards and your chocolate. Listen to me when I need to be talked to. Well, the Lord says the same thing. Because oftentimes we go to God and we have fallen into a habit of telling God what he already knows and telling him what he's supposed to do about it. But a part of prayer, earnest prayer, that changes persecution and unites people and brings them through challenges is not prayer only that speaks to God, but listens to God. At the heart of every relationship that is strong and healthy, it is about sharing and communicating. It is also about listening. And we have taken the ways of the world that God is some kind of a genie in a lamp, and all we got to do is talk to him the right way, but tell him what's on our mind in our egotistical and narcissistic way of looking, that God is waiting by the phone to tell us, to hear us, to give him orders. But we're the servants. We're the disciples. We're the followers. And that means we need to listen to God about what God is doing and what we got to do to get in line with what his purpose and plan actually is. And the women of the WMU who pray are listening to God as much as they're talking to God. And that's what overcomes persecution. And the kind of situation your church is in today, where it is hurting and looking and listening to God, the women of the church are the backbone that can bring us through this. Prayer without persistence that goes on and on and on is prayer that goes away. It is prayer that never makes a difference, because prayer has to be persistent and continual. The other day, my grandson and I were out playing in the woods and goofing off and looking, and he picked up from the stream this gorgeous, beautiful rock that was not, at one time in its development, was jagged and big and strong and sharp, but had been smoothed over almost like a curve in many different ways. And it was just as smooth as a baby's behind when you touched it and look at it. He said, "Granddad, how in the world did this rock get so smooth?" It sat in the water for how many generations? And in the fight of the water against the jagged rock, the persistence of the water smooths the jagged edges of the rock. So must our prayer be persistent and continual and not give up. And the prayer of the WMU and the example of today's day that we want to share is the prayer that overcomes persecution, because it is consistent and persistent and will not give up. And it smooths over every jagged rock and brings us through every trial and every challenge that we as a family or as an individual or as a church or as a community will face. Persistent prayer needs to be continual and not give up. But it also prayer to be effective and to be earnest, the kind of prayer that Rhoda knew and that the house of Mary was famous for and that brought Peter out of prison, was the prayer that leads to perspiration. Prayer must be persistent, but it also must be involved perspiration. And what I mean by that is, because prayer without perspiration, without action, without putting feet on prayer, leads ultimately to disappointment. The most persistent people who pray in this church are the WMU, and may their example shine bright today. Because without persistent prayer that leads to perspiration, where people sweat and projects are taken and things move on, we become incorporated into our own lives and the walls build up around us and we can't see through and hear the needs of the community. And the beauty of the WMU's projects bring us to know that their prayers bring us to perspiration, to a place where we have to perspire and work and do and make a difference in this world. A world that is racked by persecution and needs to be overcome by prayer. Persistent prayer that involves perspiration. The strongest woman I've ever had in my life was my grandmother, who helped raise me. My grandmother was a woman of prayer. She's been dead since probably 25 years now. And you can still sit in her rocking chair where she prayed every day and feel the power that was hers when she sat in that chair and opened her Bible and read it and rocked. When I need to go pray, I sit in that chair. That's a praying chair. That's a powerful chair. And it came from a woman who knew how to pray And she did it in that rocking chair. When Grandmama opened her Bible, things changed. When my Grandmama opened her Bible, she was able to overcome the persecution of an alcoholic husband who was violent to all of us at times. And my grandmother was able to overcome the loss of her beloved son who was blown up in World War II by a German U-boat. She was able to overcome everything that life had thrown at her because of the persistent power of prayer that she found in that chair. She showed me her Bible one day, and I looked through it and looked through it, and as was my habit, maybe some of yours, it was to take my highlighter and my pen and to underline all the verses in the Bible that have meant something to me and to make notes about it. My grandmother's Bible was void of all the highlighters and the underlinings and the pens, and I was just taken by surprise when I looked in and I said, "Grandmama, have you not made any notes in this Bible? Have you not underlined anything? Have you not read this thing?" She looked at me and she said, "Boy, there are two kinds of ways to know God. One is by ink and one is by tears. I marked that Bible with my tears. I know where to find God in those pages because you can see my tear marks on those pages. My Bible was never marked by ink because I never knew God by ink. I knew God not by what people wrote about him or said about him. I knew about him by my tears and my pain and my prayer." We come to know God through persistent prayer. We come to know God by a kind of prayer that doesn't give up, that leads us to perspiration. Peter thought it was too good to be true when his life was all but over. And Peter came to God in a way of freedom and in a way when nobody could ever understand that he was free. But what the power was not in those chains falling off or going by the doors opening or the soldiers that walked away. It was from the power of the prayer that opened those doors. Because persistent prayer that leads to perspiration is the kind of prayer that the WMU brings to the prison on Sunday, on Thursday nights. It is the same when we have our Christmas program and gathers all of the supplies, the pickles and the ketchup and the chips and everything else, but comes out there and serves those men at Christmas time. It is the power of prayer that comes out there for Bible study from different WMUs. It comes out there for discipling. It comes out there for bringing clothes and cosmetic items. This is the kind of prayer that involves perspiration and makes a difference and opens doors and brings angels to the prison with hope and love and freedom and following Jesus, where people who find the shackles of crime and violence dropped off and come to Jesus because of the persistent, perspiring prayer that the women in this church and many other Baptist churches have. Why did Peter's doors get open? Why was Peter a testimony? Well, let me tell you about me. My nickname is Peter. Because in 1974, I had had a run of years come to an end where when I was in the eighth grade, the SBI came in through the house on a drug raid. When I was in the 10th grade, it was the sheriff. When I was in the 12th grade, six police cars came to the front of our house and took me away down to the Guilford County Jail. And what changed my life was not a work release program. It was not a set of clothes. It was not deodorant and soap and shampoo. It wasn't even pickles at Christmas time, Joyce. It was the persistent prayer of a woman who would not give up on a vision that God had given her for my life. And the reason I'm here today and the shackles have fallen off and the doors have opened up was because of a persistent woman who prayed and who perspired and who loved and could not give up until God had his way in my life. The WMU is not old-fashioned. It's not out of time. It doesn't carry tablets and it doesn't have a cell phone, probably ain't got a web page and probably doesn't show up on Facebook. But it is the basis of the church because it's built on prayer. And prayer is what we have to negotiate this church through hard times and our community through times of persecution and to free men and women from prison and from all that keeps them from being who God wants them to be. It is about prayer and it is about women who pray. And today, Peter stands on the door and knocks. And women like Joyce and Glendora and Edith and Janice and Martha are praying. And doors are opening and inmates are going free. And people are overcoming illnesses and mindsets and challenges because of the WMU that believes in being unshakable and believes in being pursuing and believes in prayer. Thanks be to God.